They're an alternative to standard treatments. So we're discussing clinical trials for brain tumor patients. Our guest is Dr. Sajil Chowdhury. He's director of neuro-oncology translational research with the Tampa General Hospital Cancer Institute, as well as a professor of neurology and neuro-oncology at the University of South Florida's Morsani College of Medicine. This is Community Connect, presented by TGH. Thanks for joining us. I'm Joey Waller. Hi there, Dr. Chowdhury. Welcome.
Thank you, Joey. Hello. How are you?
Great. Thanks. And appreciate the time. First, what's the climate right now regarding clinical trial opportunities for brain tumor patients?
Joey, we work in a very difficult field of cancer research these days where funding is very difficult and having the resources for clinical trials is much more of a difficult environment compared to how it used to be about two decades ago. And I'm not just speaking about the recent challenges with government funding for research, but even in the past 10 years, it's been a very harsh environment, mostly because of research resources not being available as much as they used to be back in the old days. But having said that, cancer researchers like myself and others at our institution and other academic institutions have found novel, thoughtful, and unique ways to do clinical trials. So I would say that we still host or we still have a very rich environment for brain tumor clinical trials research at our institution at the Tampa General Hospital Cancer Institute. And there are so many different ways that we look at cancer-related clinical trials. Often I teach my students that in the world of cancer, there are two types of clinical research, or there are two types of cancer research. There is basic science translational research, or I sometimes call it transformative research, which is bench to bedside, and sometimes bedside back to bench to get a second look at the product or the test or the research, and then bring it back from bench to bedside once again. The second box contains experimental clinical trials. And perhaps I would say in most academic cancer research environments, I'd say it's about a 60-40 split. 40% of research is translational research, and about 60% usually contains clinical trials research.
And so having said that, Doctor, how do you usually go about choosing clinical trials for a patient? How do you find a fit?
Great question, Joey. And I always tell my patients, as I had a patient in clinic just yesterday, they came with their mom who's a bit elderly, has a relatively rare tumor histology or histopathology, which means that the tumor pathology was relatively rare. And they brought all their children with them, the husband, and cousins. So it was a room full of very loving family. And a question came up exactly so that what would be the best clinical trial for them? And so I always guide families that the best trial that they can pick for their loved one really is based on a few factors. Number one, of course, the tissue histopathology, what the tumor type is. Secondly, it also depends on patient's age and their performance status. That for an example, our cancer center is in Tampa Bay, of course, and we often get patients from out of town, might be 2 hours away, 3 hours away. For instance, like the west coast of Florida goes all the way down to Naples and beyond. And sometimes we'll get patients from that part of Florida. And it's about a 3-hour drive to come to Tampa Bay. But patients with better performance status, if I have a clinical trial available, and they can make that 2-hour drive every month or every 2 weeks to come see me, then that would also factor in the geographical location of the clinical study. That would also factor in whether a patient can be a part of the trial. So I would say that patients' tissue diagnosis, their performance status, and their family's resources, how much support they have, that initially plays a big role in deciding what kind of a clinical trial would be best for them.
And then what are the different types of clinical trials in neuro-oncology these days?
Generally, we substratify and subclassify brain tumor cancer research trials into different phases. The old classic model was that most of CNS or brain tumor clinical trials were subdivided into phase one, phase two trials. Majority of them were phase one and phase two trials. Phase one trials, in all intents and purposes, were trials that were more centric towards drug discovery and just defining the safe dosing of a new experimental agent before that experimental agent can be advanced onwards towards phase two or phase three testing. So this was put in place by the FDA, I would say sensibly so, many years ago. They wanted to encourage investigators like myself and others in our team that if you have a drug or a new drug that you wanted to study in a certain brain tumor type, you want to first make sure the drug dose is an optimal dose. And plus, as importantly, or maybe arguably more importantly, that drug dose, as it's a new drug, never been tested in human studies, that it's a safe dose and what's the toxicity profile. So those are mostly the phase one trials. Once we succeed in phase one studies, generally the purpose of phase one trials as a primary objective is not to see whether the drug has a significant benefit in that cancer type. Usually drugs that make it to phase one testing, they've been tested before in small single institution drug trials. So we already know there's drug activity against the tumor, but phase one trials are more toxicity data and dosing establishment. Then phase two trials are really the trials where we're testing a drug on a certain brain tumor type to see if it really works. And that's where about 80% of brain tumor trials are phase one and phase two trials. And then there are also phase three, phase four trials. Phase four trials are few and far between their post-marketing studies. Phase three trials were comparing a new regimen to standard of care. And then the new age is now defining phase zero trials, which we're trying kind of like quick and dirty trials because clinical trials have become so expensive that you can test a drug to kind of establish which one are the good acting drugs that have promise.
Interesting. So there's even a phase zero.
That's correct.
So you mentioned the term agent, clinical trial agent. Just to take a quick step back, Doc, explain please, if you would, exactly what that is.
A clinical trial agent, and I'm going to be more just focused and a bit short-sighted on brain tumor trials. Generally, in the grand scheme, it's a drug or a medication that is new, recently discovered, if you will. So most clinical trial, brain tumor trial agents are medicational drugs. Sometimes we have devices as well, like we are more recently have been studying this radioactive seeds, cesium-131, and there's a concept of brachytherapy, which means local radiation therapy, and we're involved with two clinical trials looking at the role of local radiation for high-grade gliomas, that's a specific type of a brain tumor, and CNS metastasis. So not always does it happen that a investigational agent is a drug. It could also be a radiation device, and there are some other entities as well.
So next up, drumroll please, doctor, the million-dollar question that so many wonder and so many, I'm sure, ask you on a regular basis. What are the benefits of clinical trials over standard therapies, generally speaking, of course?
Remembering a patient I met in the hospital just about a month ago, a very nice family again, who we were talking about their new brain tumor diagnosis, the tumor biology, a term we use, meaning the personality of the tumor was rather an aggressive tumor, unfortunately, that many may render it to be a controllable disease, but not a curative disease. So, of course, in those scenarios, we often will have clinical trials available. And the patient's wife asked me, geez, if radiation and chemotherapy, that standard, is going to work and my husband is going to be okay, we can control the disease, then why do we have to consider clinical trials? And mostly one of the best answers that I give is that we all go into the field of oncology to cure cancer, and we hope one day we will completely cure cancer. And so in pursuit of that journey, as investigators and researchers and clinician scientists, we're always developing clinical trials research. So many a times, or majority of our trials are not placebo trials. Patients get standard of care plus drug X and plus drug Y, for instance. So it's like you get your cake and you can eat it too, that you can get standard of care therapy plus another agent added to it that might give that extra oomph and that extra push that maybe will reach that promised land of curing that disease for that patient. And the family understood that philosophy, and they agreed to consider that certain clinical trial.
So oftentimes a clinical trial isn't so much something instead of a standard treatment as much as an additive, right? A supplement.
Precisely.
A couple of other things before we let you go. It's interesting. You mentioned earlier, doctor, sitting in a room full of loved ones of a brain tumor patient and laying it out for all of them. And it brings up a great point, I think, which is that typically when these diagnoses occur, it affects an entire family for a variety of reasons. And because of that, I wonder, what's it like for you when you're laying things out, not just for the patient, but for their kids, their parents, who knows, whoever else might be attached and involved? What's that like for you? Because you know that so much is hanging in the balance, so to speak.
Great question, Joey. And that might actually be the $100 million question. I'm very blessed. Our local university produces excellent medical students, and every week I have one of them with me. They're in their third year of medical college. And I always want to teach them that, yes, treating disease is important and the patient, but to be a better doctor, you have to treat the whole family. And especially in the world of cancer, where it really becomes a family affair, it's a life-changing experience. So as a good doctor, as a good cancer doctor, if you haven't touched the lives of the husband who's going to be the caregiver now, of the wife, of the son and daughter who were away in college in faraway states and cities that will now have to visit more often to come help with their mom, and the sister that was always reliant on the patient but now needs to be the caregiver instead. So you almost have to have 8 conversations with all the other 7 family members in a room, not just the patient. And you almost have to form that connection as an oncologist with not only the patient, but almost equally as importantly, to their kids, their siblings, their loved ones, and then maintain that relationship. And you have to support them as well, because that's the whole unit. By just caring for the patient, that will not be enough. And if you care for the family, they will help the good doctors carry the patient through this very difficult journey.
To follow up on that in summary here, doctor, what's it like basically trying to balance providing hope for patients, which is obviously a key part of what you're doing here, while at the same time keeping things realistic in terms of expectations? Is that a fine line sometimes?
Yes, Joey, very, very crucial question there. As cancer doctors and clinician scientists, we have to be the ever optimists. And we go to work every day having hope ourselves to have the spirit to give our patients everything they need that day, because we have that hope at the end of the tunnel that we can fix this one day and we can cure this. And the last thing good doctors want is to lose their patients to a disease. But on the same token, we have to be realistic. If the median survival of a certain cancer is 2 to 3 years, it's almost a bit of an art. That's where they say the art of oncology is just as critical as the sciences. And as much as we have to give the realisms, but we have to find a way delicately. And as you said, Joey, very well spoken, it's a fine line, that we also have to give them hope that everybody's individualized, their cancer genetics are different, the way they will respond to radiation and chemotherapy and clinical trial drug agents can be different. But I agree with you, one has to be realistic and very upfront, but also find a way that we can infuse optimism, because I believe hope directly equates to our patients having the spirit to fight, and that's the wind beneath their sails. So we cannot take away that either.
Very well said indeed. Well, folks, we trust you're now more familiar with clinical trials for brain tumor patients. Dr. Chowdhury, keep up all your great work. It's certainly groundbreaking work, and as you just explained so very well, one that involves, as you put it, more than just science, the art, as you said, of the oncology work that you do, providing that human touch. And a pleasure, and thanks so much again.
Thank you, Joey. Appreciate it.
And for more information, please do visit tgh.org/institutes-and-services/neuroscience-institute. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to like, subscribe, and follow Community Connect, presented by TGH, on your favorite podcast platform, and share it on your social media as well. I'm Joey Wallert, and thanks again for being part of Community Connect, presented by TGH.